April 16, 2007, we're visiting with Dr. Harold Wright, who had a lot of time at the Hawthorne Center, and it's going to be the prime goal of our discussion today. And we usually start off with a voice check, so people listening to the tape and the person transcribing knows whose voice is who they're listening to. So,
okay, I'm Harold Wright. I spent 34 years at Hawthorne Center.
And that that's most of the time. They just celebrated their 50th last year.
Yeah.
So what did you do there?
Well, I started out when it opened in July of 1956 as a resident in child psychiatry. I'd had my first year residency in child psychiatry at U of M, and I'd had 2 years residency at Chicago in adult psychiatry, and prior to that I'd had 2 years residency in pediatrics. So I came to Hawthorne to complete my last year of residency in child psychiatry.
And then stayed there.
And stayed there. I intended, really, when I got into psychiatry to practice pediatrics and to perhaps do a better job in pediatrics with the training in child psychiatry, but I never left child psychiatry. And after my residency, I was a staff psychiatrist, and I was also the pediatrician at the center. And then in 1970, I became the director, and I was the director of the facility for 20 years, leaving in 1990 when I retired from Hawthorne.
Okay, for those who may be listening to this or reading it after it's transcribed, tell us a little about the center. A lot of people don't know what it is.
Okay. Well, it was a comprehensive children's psychiatric hospital that included inpatient service, outpatient service, day treatment program, and a research program. In addition, there was a training program for our psychiatric residents, for psychologists, for social workers, for special ed teachers. And there were associations with the surrounding universities, U of M, University of Michigan, Michigan State, Wayne, and Eastern Michigan. And we had students from all those universities at the center. It was a unique setting when it first was opened. There really were no other facilities like it around here, and in fact, in many other parts of the country. And prior to it being built and opened, there were children in Michigan in psychiatric hospitals, but they were in adult psychiatric hospitals on wards with adults. And there were not programs for children. For example, there was no school program in any of the adult hospitals. And so a group of people in the state, particularly a group of women, became very interested in that problem and took it upon themselves to see what might be done to remedy that situation so that there could be children's psychiatric hospitals. And the groups of women that were particularly interested in that were members of the American Association of University Women and the League of Women Voters. And there was one woman in Michigan who spearheaded and organized the whole group. Her name was Mrs. Edward LaTulip.
Spell that for the transcriber.
LaTulip.
Okay.
And they visited they got permission to visit the adult hospitals, and thought that the provisions for the children in the adult hospitals were abysmal, and that there needed to be a better program. And interestingly, how they went about it was unique. They got the Detroit newspapers, the News and the Free Press, interested, and there were reporters in those two papers. Alan Schoenfeld in the Detroit News, and Warren Stromberg, in the Free Press. And they became interested, and they began writing many articles in the paper about this dreadful situation of having children in the adult hospitals and the enormous need to have appropriate facilities. And G. Menon Williams was the governor at that time, And he was interested. And so, interestingly, were the legislators from a bipartisan standpoint. So it wasn't one side or the other. And so it went forward rather rapidly. I think it was probably late 1954, early 1955 that this impetus started. And then monies were appropriated for Lafayette Clinic in Detroit, and then for the Hawthorne Center in Northville. And by the way, the name for Hawthorne Center is interesting. It was built on 58 acres, the southeastern corner of the Northville State Hospital property, and that acreage abounded with Michigan hawthorn bushes, and that's where the name came from. And so the building was completed, not in its present form, a much smaller form, major building for the hospital, central hospital unit, and the five cottages behind it that still exist. And it had been planned, they had gotten a group of professionals together to plan this hospital. And that group included a number of people, but particularly a famous psychologist, Dr. Radel, Fritz Radel. And I understand, this is before my time, but I understand that the original concept was that this was going to be a summer and weekend facility for emotionally disturbed and mentally ill children in the greater Detroit area. But that is not the way it materialized. And Sophie Williams, the governor, then had this, at that time, a very sort of lavish facility with nobody to man it. And at that time, late in 1955, early 1956, I was, as I said, in my first year of residency training in child psychiatry with Dr. Ralph Rabinovich and his wife, Dr. Sarah Dubow, at the University of Michigan. And at that time, he and the two of them had decided that they weren't going to remain in the Michigan program. There were some problems that were going on. And so simultaneously with that feeling, Dr. R, we call Dr. Rabinovich Dr. R, got a call from Sophie Williams saying, would you and Sarah be interested in coming to Hawthorne and running the Children's Psychiatric new hospital there? And so I remember his telling me, I think there were about six of us who were residents with him that year, and he said, he told us about this conversation and said he would like to come out and visit Hawthorne, and he wondered if we wouldn't like to come too. So I came on the original visit on a rainy late March day in 1956. I remember it very well. when we got in the main building, that was when you go in the front door, you're in the outpatient clinic, and it was a great glass structure, one glass office after the other. When R saw it, he said he never saw such a place. How would you ever treat children in a glass house like that? And as he went through it, he had similar comments. But the straw that broke the camel's back was when we went out the back door from the main building to go toward the cottages. As I said, it was raining, and there wasn't any there weren't any sidewalks in it yet. And as he walked, he had galoshes on. As he walked up, he lost his footing, fell in with all fours, and said this was the worst facility he'd ever seen, and absolutely he would not come to this place. And so we went back, and actually we went to a couple of other places to visit the program. One was in Cleveland, and then he reassessed his initial thoughts about the situation. Came to visit several times more and decided that something could be done to remedy all the glass, for example, in the outpatient clinic. And by that time, a sidewalk was between the main building and the cottages. And so he decided to come to Hawthorne. And so July 1st, 1956, he came with Sarah and about 25, I think, staff members from the University of Michigan, and started the program. We started with the outpatient clinic first because we didn't have all the staff for an inpatient program. And I remember as a resident, it so happened that I saw the first patient that was ever seen at Hawthorne. And he was the son of a guy who'd done some bulldozing on the outside of Hawthorne. And he had a 12-year-old boy who had a severe learning problem, a severe learning disability, reading disability. And that happened to be one of Dr. Rabinovich's major interests. So it was like it was planned that this boy came and was seen and was the first case seen at Hawthorne. Modifications had, this was a civil service, the positions at Hawthorne were civil service positions. And in all the adult hospitals at that point, the individuals who took care of the patients were attendants, and without much training. And R said, I think very rightly, that that wouldn't be appropriate for a children's hospital. And so he had some contact with the Civil Service Commission, and he set up a category for child care workers. And child care workers, according to the requirements, were to have had at least 2 years of college, hopefully in subjects that were appropriate to child psychology, psychiatry, hopefully even had a bachelor's degree. Many of them did. And so that category was set up, and so the children, the individuals who worked under the nursing staff with the children were the child care workers. And then gradually the staff increased considerably. The inpatient service was opened. The daycare unit was opened, and the outpatient clinic continued to see a number of children. In terms of numbers at that time, the outpatient saw probably around 1,000 new evaluations each year. In the original hospital, there were beds for something like 60 patients. And then the day treatment program in the first year or two was housed in one of the cottages, and I think there were maybe 15 children in that program. Then gradually there were building programs that went on at least three different times. The South Wing was built with four 20-bed units. A research wing was built, financed from private funds totally, not from state funds at all. And the there was a new day treatment building that was added that included about 120 children. So the maximum capacity over the years was 162 inpatients, as I said, about 1,000 outpatients per year. And then there was the research program that included a chromosomal laboratory where various clinical entities were studied and tested. So it became a very unusual program. There really were none like it, certainly in Michigan and even in the country. And so then gradually there was an interest in establishing more children's hospitals in Michigan, and at their peak there were a total of seven, Traverse City, Pontiac, Ypsilanti, et cetera, Detroit. And unfortunately now today we're back to one, Hawthorne Center. We'll talk about that later, I guess, how we got there. The day treatment program worked very closely with public schools, community clinics. Children were referred, and then we developed an early intervention program that would take preschool children down to age 2.5 or 3. So children from that age, 2.5 up to 18, were served. Initially, children throughout the state of Michigan, and then as it developed that there were six other hospitals, they were divided into various geographic areas. But frequently, children were sent from one of the other areas to Hawthorne when they had a special need that, that couldn't be met in the local the hospital. So a big variety of children with a variety of problems were seen over the years. Psychotic children, schizophrenic children, autistic children, neurotic children with a variety of problems, school refusals, obsessive-compulsive disorders, children with organic brain damage, children with psychosomatic problems, for example, physical problem like asthma with concomitant emotional problems, ulcerative colitis, et cetera. And there was great interest throughout Michigan and then rapidly throughout the country about the Hawthorne program because it was fairly unique. We had people come from all over. And then we began to get people from other parts of the world, notably England and Europe, Australia. We had some people visiting from Australia. And in a number of instances, they came so that hopefully they could get some ideas about what they might develop in their own country or their own area. A lot of clinical research was done at the center, clinical studies where you would take a group of children, for example, anorexic patients, mostly girls, and do a clinical study of the, I was involved in that study, the 60 girls with anorexia, and so we studied them over a prolonged period to see how the treatment techniques that we've been utilizing turned out. My wife has that. And reported that. Long-term studies of schizophrenics, children with reading disabilities. I was involved in an asthma study that involved the University of Michigan from the medical side and from the psychiatric side, Hawthorne Center. So it was a fascinating experience to have, to be in a setting like that where there are so many different kinds of opportunities were going on, and in the early years, the legislature and the government continued to be very supportive of the program, and in more recent years, the situation changed enormously with the feeling that it was important to treat children in the community, not in hospitals. And so I'm sure you've read what's going on today. In many instances, very sick from a psychiatric standpoint, children for whom there are no facilities end up in the judicial system. In the, many of them are in prisons and with the court and are not receiving appropriate mental health treatment. So, but Hawthorne remains open now. As I said, it's the only one of the seven to remain open. Its function today is very, very different. It's the average length of stay in the early years was usually something like 6 or 8 months, because these were children who had had a variety of psychiatric interventions before without significant improvement. Now the average length of stay is a week or 2 weeks, and many of the children who are referred nowadays, it's very unlikely that you could make any significant intervention in such a short time. So it's an in-and-out process now. The outpatient clinic has been closed. The day treatment has been closed. The research program is closed. The training program has diminished enormously because you don't have a clinical population now to utilize in the training program. And so the people, the PhD psychologists, for example, and the some of the social workers are no longer being trained in that program, and at least anywhere nearly as extensively as they were before.
So the patients that come here are all referral patients?
They're all referral patients, and now they're referred exclusively by the community mental health clinics. And not only are they referred by the mental health clinic, but they're usually referred for admission because there isn't any outpatient service or day treatment now. And then the discharge of those patients is determined by the mental health clinic, not by the staff at Hawthorne. Boggles my mind. but that's the way it is. And so the kind of child or the diagnosis of the children and adolescents who are there now are very different. There isn't the broad spectrum of children going into the hospital now. They're largely children who have had very extensive behavioral problems, come to the attention of the court, and who've exhausted services in the court or in the mental health clinic, and who come really as a last resort to the hospital now. Of course, then what can be done for those children is quite limited compared to what we could do many years ago when we had more say in what child could come into the hospital and the kind of problems that that child could have. Now they're very limited, and those situations are determined not in the hospital but in community clinics. That's not unique to Michigan. That's happened pretty much all over the country. And so the situation that's happened here with the closing of the hospitals has happened in all the other states too.
Now you mentioned some of the things that the patients had or were. How far a range? Now I'll use the word relatively. That doesn't mean it's not a problem. Some are relatively more simple, and you get up into like schizophrenia and the full range of
For example, there's a category of child called children with school refusals, children who have, for psychological reasons, have not been able to attend school, and frequently who've been out several years of school at a time, perhaps before they're referred. And one would certainly try with such a child to work with him or her as an outpatient or as a day treatment program. But there are certain of those children in that category who don't benefit from that kind of treatment. And in the past, many years ago, those children came into Hawthorne for a period of, say, a school semester or two semesters. And then one worked with them to get them back in the school, in public school back home. And those are tend to be very bright children who actually do well in school, but it was the emotional problems that they had that kept them from being in school. And so now it's not possible to bring that kind of kid into the hospital. And so whoever's working with him works on the outside. I've had people call in 6 months ago and say, "Dr. Ray, what can we do? We have a severe school refusal. We've done everything." And the answer is today with the situation as it is, you can't do anything in a hospital like Hawthorne, as we did for many years. An anorexic patient who, without appropriate, a severe anorexic, who's lost perhaps half of her body weight, some of them are not treatable as outpatients and need to be in hospitals, and from my view, and can be turned around so that they can get back to function normally. But those kind of kids are not eligible for a setting like Hawthorne any longer. The criteria to get a child in Hawthorne now or another public hospital is that he has to be have committed an act that would suggest that he's dangerous to himself or others. So he has to be attempting to stab somebody or something like that. So there are a number of categories. There are milder ones. You asked about milder ones. Another group that I was fascinated with were children who have what is called elective mutism. They're able to talk, and they talk very well at home, but they typically do not talk at all in school. And they can get along well in kindergarten and sometimes early in first grade, and then as the problems become more complex, they can't, and they don't make appropriate academic progress. And many of elective mutes, if you get them early enough, referred, can be helped as an outpatient. But a few, again, cannot be. A brief period, say in a hospital, several weeks, months, maybe 2 months, it can have an enormously positive effect on these children. Help them get started in talking in the school. I haven't mentioned much about the school program at Hawthorne. In Hawthorne, and then perhaps in going into the day treatment program, and then back to the public school. And those children, then if you follow them many years later, do exceedingly well. And many of them go on to college, are able to talk fine. But without intervention, the mutism continues.
And they were there for a school term. Did you have schooling for them while they were there too?
Yeah, exactly. I should have talked about that. We had an elaborate school program that went from preschool to 12th grade. And the children were in small classrooms, typically 10 in a classroom, something like that. In addition, if they needed extra attention, the teachers, by the way, were certified for teaching emotionally disturbed children. And then in addition, if they needed more help than that, tutors were available to work with them directly. For example, if they had a severe reading problem, to work with them on a daily basis in that regard. If there were behaviors that were significantly affecting the school adjustment, again, the behavioral problems could be dealt with in the program by the teacher, and if the child couldn't make it there, then the therapist would become involved. And so they would not be banished from school as they might well be in a public school. So the school program was absolutely a vital component of the program at Hawthorne, because the majority of the children who came there had school problems, if not primary, that were secondary to the emotional problems they had, schizophrenia or severe depression or manic depressive disorders that interfered. So the school was a very vital program. Meetings would be held on a regular basis to discuss how the child was doing from a therapeutic standpoint, how he was doing in the living situation, how he was doing in school, and members of all those various disciplines were present there. So at the end of the meeting, there was a this is what we're going to try now. Let's try this, and let's see how it is. And 2 weeks later, if we're not getting anywhere, let's have another meeting. So of course, all the children had primary therapists. The therapist was either a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or a social worker, whom that child saw two or three times a week, or more often if necessary. So it was a very comprehensive program that attempted to meet the needs of all the needs that the child had. And I haven't mentioned the needs of the family. The family was also seen regularly by a social worker, and frequently parent would be involved in some of these meetings too, particularly when you were getting close to discharge, so that you could affect the same changes in the home environment that had been produced up till then. Then in addition to that, we were able to develop a liaison with a fair number of placement facilities where some of the children could go after they left Hawthorne if they couldn't go home. A variety of places. St. Francis Home for Boys, for example, a number of facilities in Detroit. Those, interestingly, too, have largely closed. They cost money, of course, and with limited monies, many of the facilities have closed. Our Lady of Providence out on Beck Road has closed for that reason. That is unfortunate, because I wasn't talking about long-term placements, but sometimes short-term placements following the hospitalization could really cement the gains that were made during the hospitalization and enable the child then ultimately to go home and then on to college if he or she was able to do that.
Did you have an organized follow-up program?
Yes, we did. We had the outpatient clinic, you see. And if it were possible for the child to be followed locally in the home, or if the distance was too great, that was done in the community clinic. But always, if that weren't possible, it was available at Hawthorne that there be a follow-up. And that was vitally important, as you can imagine, because, of course, when a child makes a number of gains in the hospital, one hopes that he can continue to make those gains on the outside, but, say, going back home, or maybe part of the cause of the difficulty occurred in the first place, and so there could be a recurrence. So the follow-up was extremely important, and we tried to see that took place.
Hawthorne today is down the living facility.
Yes.
It has roughly how many?
The cottages have been closed, Dick, and one of the wards closed. So I think it's in the neighborhood of 75, 80 now. I'm not sure of that right now, but I think it's in that vicinity. And as I say, it serves now the state, because it's the only public facility in the state. That you can imagine what some of the problems are in that regard. If a child comes from the Upper Peninsula here,
right,
how in the world do you work with the family and so forth? There are other, there are private facilities, but many of those are closing too. So that the majority of the children, I think, do come from the greater Detroit area.
In your time serving there, I presume you've seen a fair amount of change with regard to medication for treating.
Indeed. That has probably been the biggest change in the past 15, 20 years, is the ascendancy of psychotropic medications. And, of course, in some instances, it's extremely helpful. Say if you talk about children with attention deficit disorders and the stimulant medications, Ritalin, Dexedrine, Adderall, and so forth, they can be absolutely invaluable. There are now a number of drugs for psychotic or schizophrenic children that can be very helpful too, but in that category, the side effects from the drugs are very, must be watched very closely. Now, you probably have read that a number of the drugs being used for schizophrenia in adults and children have very untoward side effects, tremendous weight gains, and now they're learning that diabetes is a real complication. In the arena of depression, there have been a great many extremely helpful medications, but again, you have to be careful because of the side effects, and probably you've read now there's concern about whether or not some of the antidepressants perhaps increase the likelihood of suicide in some children. But that's a debatable issue, because here we've got a very depressed child, say, who certainly has suicidal thoughts, and if you don't give any medication, what is the likelihood of a suicidal? So that can be potentially a real problem. And then maybe a negative overall effect of medication is perhaps too great a dependency on medication. And then in instances, for example, my example of the elective mutes, the children who don't talk, I saw over, I think, 80 children with elective mutism. I never put any child on medication. There was no need to. Now, many people would think that those children should be treated with medication. If they're depressed, they should be. But on the other hand, it worries me to be giving children medication when we know that there are other methods of treating something, for example, psychotherapy, where there isn't going to be the potential for a bad side effect that there could be with some medication. And then, interestingly, the insurance companies now would, for example, in elective mutism, perhaps far prefer that the doctor who sees that child use medication, because they're hoping that that's going to be a shorter period of time. And so it's a mixed blessing in some ways, but certainly in the area of depression or manic depressive disorder, for example, the medications are absolutely invaluable, and some of them in psychosis are very valuable too, but you have to watch so carefully with these side effects that I just touched upon.
You're back years ago, your live-in community, what age span do they cover?
The ones who were at the center?
Yeah, there were the hospitalized ones.
Yeah, they of course, the majority of them were teenagers, but we occasionally did go down to a five-year-old. For example, a child who was a diagnostic puzzle, perhaps around the issue of his language development, where attempts had been made in the outpatient clinic to ferret this out and determine what the problem was, but you couldn't do that, so perhaps bringing him in for an observational period of a month or 6 weeks or something could be very helpful. But the majority of the children were in the teenage. And like all facilities of its kind in the world, as far as I know, the ratio of boys to girls was something like 3 or 4 to 1. In this field, it's bad to be a male, because almost every entity you talk about, except, say, anorexia and depression in adolescence, males outnumber females. So always we had more boys, so we had more boys' wards than girls' wards. And as I say, that's true all over the world. There are certain entities where it's much more striking than others. For example, learning disabilities, reading disabilities, are 8 or 9 or 10 times as common in boys as in girls. Presumably, we're going to be increasingly clear on why that is, and undoubtedly related to genetics as we learn more about chromosomes and the genes and so forth. It's very exciting to read about it. It was a little difficult. I retired. I went on to work 16 years after I left Hawthorne on a part-time basis as a consultant to school, and I just retired last June. And it's a little hard to retire when you've been for 50 years. I was in the field, so I still keep. I read about it. One of my friends said, "Oh, you'll stop reading." Well, that hasn't happened yet. I can't stop reading. I have to know what's going on with it. It's been an exciting field to be in, because I was certified in a specialist in first in pediatrics, then adult psychiatry, then child psychiatry. And when I was certified in child psychiatry, it was in 1960, and I think my certification number was something like 150 or something. So it was a new specialty, and I was the 150th or something person to have the certification. So it was an exciting field to be in, and still is. It's fascinating. As you can tell from my talk about my discussion about the closure of Hawthorne, the hospitals and the change in the functioning that they've allowed for Hawthorne, I think that's really too bad, and I would hope the pendulum would swing back someday, but I don't know how far it will swing back. And of course, money was a very major issue. But it's interesting when you look back at the history of how Hawthorne was developed. I don't remember anybody early, Sophie Williams, the legislators, saying, well, we can't afford this kind of thing. And then, you know, the argument is, if you're not affording it and you're not providing services, what are you having to pay in the future when these patients end up in the prison system?
That may be the problem, is you can't quantify it, put the numbers out there to show that it is cost productive to treat it up front.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I'm sure it is, but how you prove that, I don't know.
Yeah, difficult. And the climate is a bit different now. I remember the legislators when we had to go and testify about budgets and so forth. In the early years, there were people in the legislature who were just intensely interested in this. There was I don't know whether the name Joe Snyder means anything to you, but he was a senator. He was just absolutely wonderful guy. And he was very much in favor of mental health issues. Actually, he had a son who was a troubled boy. And it was a joy when you'd go and testify, and Joe would be there. But there were people on both sides. You know, it wasn't just one political party. I mentioned Soapy many times, but Milliken was equally in favor of these kind of programs. It was a pleasure when you dealt with him. Climate is different today. It's hard to find people really interested in this field. You know, for example, the issues over parity now of medical insurance versus psychiatric insurance. There's not much parity. Maybe we'll get to that, but it's not there now.
You got any questions?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And, you're welcome.
This is without a doubt the easiest interview we've ever done.
It's the what?
The easiest interview we've ever done.
Well, you had such a talker.
It's all
no,
right.
You actually...